Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. And tonight, by special request by so many of you, we have Gretchen Rachel Hammond joining us again. And I want to let everybody know, if you have any questions or comments for Gretchen, hit me up on Facebook and pose the question or comment there, and I'll relay it to Gretchen. And I'll be watching closely, so I'll relay anything you sent. What we're going to be talking about tonight is, poor Gretchen. first off, welcome to the show.
Hi.
I'm so glad to have you back on. A lot of people have asked repeatedly for you to come back on, and they want to hear a follow-up. They want to know how you're doing. And many of them upset when you said you were leaving the profession of journalism, and several people want to know if you're still intent on doing that.
Yes, actually I am. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, to get this piece done, I you know, spent up my entire savings account and, you know, I lost my apartment to do it. And you know, I understand that there's no crying over that to this audience. But, you know, when I sort of look back on the fact that there's two things. That first of all, that I had to do that. In other words, you know, we pitched this around to every local Michigan outlet. Of course, none of them would take it. All the national outlets, you know, the answers varied from, you know, well, this is a local story to, well, people don't want, this is from BuzzFeed, and I'll call them out and shame them. People, the editor at BuzzFeed says no one's interested in reading about the elderly. So that was a rejection I got from them. And, you know, that really soured me. And then, you know, what happened with the Detroit Free Press, who had originally given me a letter of intent to publish. And I was, you know, because of sort of the prior history, I was very, very concerned about Catch and Kill and remained concerned about that. And then, of course, you know, some people may know this story that I had been to see the Attorney General, her staff on March the 12th, and laid out all our evidence. They made it perfectly clear they weren't interested in patent and practice, you know, the 2,278 cases that we'd found. You know, within a week and a half, I'd spoken to a senator named Pete Lucido, sort of was interviewing him and asked him what they were doing about elderly abuse in Michigan, same questions. And he said, well, what do you mean? What are we doing? We formed an elder abuse task force. The attorney general herself called me on March the 13th to invite me, which was, of course, the day after we met the attorney general. Now, this was the first I'd heard of an elder abuse task force. So I called Kelly Rossman McKinney, who's Dana Nestle's communications director, and said, what's this about an elder abuse task force? She never responded. I found out there was a press conference on March 25th. I tried to RSVP to that press conference. No one responded. And what Kelly Rothman McKinney did is she called my then editor at the Free Press and said, well, we'd rather Gretchen didn't come. This is going to be about, quote, high-level elder care issues. And the Free Press, whatever that means, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
It was a lie. I mean, she said this is not about guardianship or Oakland County, which it was. And the Free Press sided with the public official over the journalist. And that, for me, has never happened before in my entire career. And I don't think any other journalist can ever mention a time when that has happened to them. So, of course, I immediately pulled the project from the Free Press. And it was that realization that, one, you know, integrity has left the business. Two, that the business now is only interested in 700 words about shit that people tweet about on Twitter. And, you know, actual investigations they're just not interested in, that said, okay, I'm done with it. I'm an idealist. And journalism is not a business for idealists anymore. I mean, yeah, sure, in sort of the last bastions in Washington, D.C. And New York, but, you know, the rest, and maybe ProPublica in Chicago, but the rest of the main national outlets and local Michigan media, just they won't touch it. And, you know,
wow.
There's one exception, WXYZ, they only do four-minute pieces. But again, anything that sort of contradicts the narrative that Ms. Nestle has been putting out is something that Michigan media outlets will not cover. And that sort of said to me, okay, this profession is no longer objective. It's entirely political.
Right.
I mean, as if you didn't know that already, but.
Yeah. The thing is, Gretchen, this has gotten away from them all across the country. As hard as they tried to keep this under the radar and squash it down, turn it into a conspiracy theory. I mean, all the crap they normally pull, the trolling online, the people attacking you, you know, the whole nine yards. This has gotten away from them. And we have seen it just in the last month, more reports coming out from all over the place, specific stories, general topic coming out about this. We have your report enabled us to do something that we have been struggling to do for years, and that is to overtake the narrative on this. Your report was so explicit, so well documented, so easy to follow. You could see the pattern of corruption that it blew the lid off of everything. Go ahead.
And I would agree, except that the problem is that, it was self-published. Hardly anyone read it. I think a couple of weeks ago I sort of looked at the share quotient and it was terrible. It was really poor. And I realized it was extremely long. You know, there were five parts each, averaging about 9,000 words each, but it was a long story to tell. Today I summarized everything in an open letter to the Michigan Attorney General, which got me banned from Facebook for a day. But at the same time, you know, the actual investigation itself, plus all the work that went into it, plus, you know, the forensic examination, which was the first public report for Michigan, has essentially, you know, sort of flown under the radar. We have tried in, you know, national media to see if anyone's interested in picking it up. But again, interest is very, very low. And that's the shame of it, you see, because one of the things that's happening now is that the four guardians and the four judges that we profiled are presently, you know, destroying evidence and removing court. We've gone back over ROAs, register of actions and court dockets, and we're seeing items that were there that are now gone. And this is destruction of evidence. And, you know, the other thing that's happening is that one of the former public administrators now, Jennifer Carney, has been sending victims small refunds for like $700, $1,000 here, $1,500, as long as they sign a form saying they got that refund and it was a billing error and they're happy with it. We've got former public administrators John Munger and Thomas Brendan Frazier who are shifting assets. Frazier just sold his house in August for $524,800.
And he sold
it in 5 days. Yeah. So, you know, all this is going on right under the nose of a sitting AG. And at the same time, my story is out and this is still happening. And because there has not been a groundswell of public anger over what is happening in Michigan, there has been no public pressure applied to Dana Nestle. Now, yesterday, a lot of the families went to an event that Nestle was holding in Mount Morris in Michigan, which is in I think it's in Genesee County. But a lot of these families showed up there. And, you know, for the past, since March 25th, Nestle's been feeding the same line, which is, You know, it's mostly family and friends. If you want to, you know, investigations on attorneys who might be doing this, and she always says might, then you really should file a complaint with the Attorney Grievance Commission, which makes no sense. I mean, you know, as I've told these families, I said, look, if I mugged you, Marty Oakley, in downtown Detroit, stole $200, and you reported it to Dana Nessel, and Nessel said, well, you know, I can't really investigate Gretchen without you filing a complaint with the Society of Professional Journalists first. You'd say, what do you mean? What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then the other thing she's been doing is been telling people, well, I'm not a probate. I wasn't a probate attorney. I have no experience with this. You are an attorney general. I mean, if you find out that people are stealing money from elderly people, housing them in subhuman conditions, those are crimes. You don't need to be a probate lawyer to examine those crimes. And again, analogy.
Right.
If Steven Spielberg went out and robbed someone, and Dana Nessel goes, well, I wasn't a filmmaker, I was an attorney, I don't know anything about this stuff. I mean, that's right again. And she was saying all this yesterday, and this time the families weren't letting her get away with it, and they pushed her and pushed her and pushed her. And finally she said, look, the only way you're going to get rid of these people, the only thing, anything is going to happen is if you file Attorney Grievance Commission or Judicial Tenure Complaint, I guarantee it. That's an exact quote from her. And then she said, the other way you can get rid of these judges, you just vote them out. She literally told people if they want to get rid of these abusive judges, they have to vote them out. She, as an attorney general, she can't remove them. I get that. But she had no other advice other than vote them out. And, of course, what she didn't mention is that, well, out of the four judges we found, one of them was appointed. And was appointed back in the Stone Age, three other judges, since they ran for election in 2010 and 2016, I mean, they've run unopposed ever since.
Yeah.
So and they get
this is what I've tried. This is what I've tried to tell people when they say our judges are elected. No, you were allowed to pick between two people that were already tapped for the job. And one of them was going to get that job whether you voted or you didn't. And then when it comes to appointed, that is an employee of the governor. And so the governor has the right to remove that person. The governor can remove that person at any time. But they won't do it, Gretchen. I don't know why I want
to
call you Rachel.
Well, the Supreme Court certainly won't. And they haven't done it in Macomb County. Catherine George, who was a judge, in 2003, this is all in the story, She kept appointing a company called Adams Guardianship Services, kind of like the Adams family without the extra A at the end. She appointed Adams Guardian, and that company was formed by two attorneys who had donated to her 2003 election campaign. She gave that company 400-plus wards. They were found engaging in all kinds of malfeasance. In 2008, when all this blew up, she was, first of all, promoted to chief judge. Then they realized that there was public attention on it. So they moved her to a different part of the court. And then Milton Mack Jr., who is now the state court administrator, kept bringing her into Wayne County, where she was abusing people there, put her back in Macomb County. And in 2019, history repeated itself. She found a company called Caring Hearts. WXYZ reported on it, and she kept assigning Caring Hearts to wards. And the one of the founders of Caring Hearts, Robert Kirk, was a donor to her campaign. And then it's just not even bad enough. She is still on the bench in Macomb County. I mean, it's like, you know, the Milton Mack Jr. is the state court administrator. He's a piece of work. I mean, he has protected these probate judges with his life. I mean, these two task forces in 1998 and 2005 that never accomplished anything, not a single legislative reform. Well, one, I believe, in 1998. Were all blocked. All their legislative reform efforts were blocked by Milton Mack Jr. and the estate and probate section of the Michigan Bar Association. And Nestle's out there going, "Oh wow, yeah, this legislation's great. We're going to get it through the legislature. No problem at all." But she doesn't mention the fact that it continually gets blocked, and the people who blocked it are now sitting on her task force.
So, you know,
it's funny how that works. Yes.
Well, yeah, well, all of this is sort of like she's selling this lemon to the people of Michigan. And a lot of them, you know, I mean, I'm not speaking for every single person in Michigan, but a lot of the families are like, well, let's give her a chance. Let's give her a chance.
Yeah.
You know, people who, you know, when I sort of try and call her out, it's like, well, she's only been there 9 months. But then my argument is, well, the Macomb County case was exposed on May 30th, and then she intervened, whatever that means, on September the 6th, so 3 months. And intervening, well, accomplishes really nothing. I mean, she objected to the $300,000 in fees that they were charging this poor couple. And you're talking about objected? What about investigated?
Yeah.
The fact that they filed, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of accounting without receipts, that should be investigated, not objected to. And, you know, they have until January to produce. I mean, this company now has until January to produce these receipts. I mean, you could carve them in granite by then. Yeah.
Gretchen, the State Attorney General office here in Minnesota and the federal DOJ, while Sessions was still in there, both told me almost word for word the same thing, and that is, we are not here to protect you. We are here to protect the state from you. And the only time they will act is if the state has suffered injury, meaning monetary damages. That is the only time you'll see any attorney general do anything. So this woman is absolutely, I think what she has found out is she not only lacks the knowledge, but she is powerless to do anything. And I think it's probably put her in a tailspin to find out she has nothing to say about this. If from her position, there's nothing she can say or do.
Well,
and that's a hard thing to admit.
Yesterday, the families were putting such heat on her. She finally said to an aide, one of the families who was sitting up front, heard her say to an aide, "Get me out of here." And the aide rushed her out. 15 minutes before she was supposed to end her speech, because these families had finally said, "We've had enough. Where are the investigations? Where are the indictments?"
Right.
And that is a question you have to ask yourself. Yes, she's only been in there 9 months, but people are in danger. These people in unlicensed nursing facilities are in physical danger, and she has done nothing. Now, I get, we don't want to harm the state. What about the people that you were put in office to protect? I mean, this is bizarre. It is utterly bizarre.
It is.
And
frankly, Gretchen, I agree with you. I've got a comment here from someone listening, and this is from Sandy Tehoe, and she is out in Idaho, and she says, has the Michigan AG responded to you at all, and have you been threatened anymore?
No, absolutely. She has not responded to me, and I'm in forced exile right now, so if she wants to threaten me, she's welcome to come find me. If she can.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not in Chicago at the moment, but I mean, it's sort of, again, you know, I have, just before the story was published, obviously we reached out to her office for comment, but absolutely nothing back. Absolutely nothing back.
Uh-huh.
The only ever communication I got from her office was via her lead prosecutor, Scott Peter, who kept warning me to stay off Facebook. You know, because I was calling her out and calling her out and calling her out. He wrote down on a couple of comment cards that one of the family members handed him, you know, sort of acting as a go-between, because he would never answer an email. He just wrote, "Stay off Facebook." And I'm, well, really? Okay. So, First Amendment rights don't count. And of course, you know, there's something to that because of a gentleman named Jonathan Vanderhagen, who was just jailed a week ago by an open county judge. Oh, no, Macomb County judge. My apologies. A Macomb County judge, because he spoke out about the system on Facebook. And it's become a First Amendment case. But he was placed in jail with a $500,000 bond because the judge, quote, felt threatened. And there was absolutely nothing threatening in his Facebook. Not a thing threatening in his Facebook.
Wow.
Nothing.
I have another note from you here. This is from Australia. The crew in Australia is listening to the show, and they said to tell you it's the same system in Australia and the same structure. Wow. Okay. Go ahead, Gretchen.
Yeah, and I've spoken to folks in Australia, and they're finding a good fight, and I got to hand it to them because they are fighting as hard as they possibly can. I've looked at their social media pages. And I know they're up against some tremendous odds, just like the people across the United States are. But I think,
yes.
You know, like you said, that there appears to be a bit of a groundswell. There certainly is in Florida with the Furley case. You know, not so much in Michigan, certainly not as much as I'd hoped. But I'm hoping that eventually, so I think what really has to happen here is that the national media has to engage. The international media has to engage, and awareness has to be raised. I still get the American public. I still get comments from people going, "What is guardianship? Never heard of it." You know, that you say guardians. I mean, you type in guardians into Google, and the first thing you get is Guardians of the Galaxy, the Marvel film.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, again, the level of public. The level of public awareness on this issue is very, very low. I mean, I've talked about ageism in the United States playing a part. You know, that letter from BuzzFeed was a perfect example of that. Nobody wants to read about the elderly. You know, and again, I think that somewhere along the lines, there has to be this point where we start looking at these people as human beings, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
Age, developmental disabled, mm-hmm. I mean, aside. They are human beings, and they are American citizens, and we're treating them as if they're garbage. And no one's no one cares. No one when you have an attorney general who is prepared to let people suffer in inhuman conditions that they do not have to be in and they should not be in, that tells me right away she is putting her political connection. And we found campaign ties between Ms. Nettle and Governor Gretchen Whitmer and Chief Judge Kathleen Ryan. That's all in there. And, you know, and she's putting her political connections ahead of human lives. And no one is calling her out for that, apart from the few people who have been very, very kind enough to follow me, you know, on social media. But no one is calling her out for it. Not the Michigan GOP, not the national GOP. But then again, it's like last week. I mean, this woman must have been born under a lucky star because last week had been the worst week in her life. She had a former campaign aide, who was a Ukrainian campaign aide, who was caught in a bribery scandal. She had one of her assistant prosecutors who was in her office hired by her predecessor, but still part of her office, because she hardly did any transitioning. That individual was caught having sexual relations with two victims in a rape case, and then you had someone in Whitmer's office saying that the Flint kids, the kids who got the poisoned water in Flint, were going to die of something. And again, no one raised a finger in protest. No one said anything. All I got instead are comments like, "Oh, well, thank you, Dana, you're doing so much, and give her a chance. She's only been there 9 months."
Yeah.
And I think it's probably because I've got a different attitude. You know, I came from Chicago, and, you know, there were protests 3 or 4 different times a day in Chicago over different things. When I was reporting in Chicago, I mean, there wasn't a day when there wasn't going to see a bunch of people who had chained themselves across Lakeshore Drive. Or I remember when Laquan McDonald was shot. And on Black Friday, we found out that Rahm Emanuel, Democratic mayor in a Democratic city, had covered up the fact that this guy had been shot. And they closed down, protesters closed down the Magnificent Miles, one of the most expensive shopping districts in Chicago, on Black Friday. No one got any shopping done because from end to end, filled with protesters, led by Jesse Jackson. And that is the attitude you get in Chicago. But I haven't seen that kind of groundswell. Certainly not over this issue, but almost over any issue. I know the UAW workers are out on strike right now, and bless them, but at the same time, you know, I don't see the kind of groundswell of support that they would have received in saying, I guess Chicago is an activist city. It's not as much these days, but this is what we need. We need public awareness. We need public support, and it just ain't happening. And I'm doing my best, my level best, to keep this alive. But unfortunately, in that race, Nestle's winning. Nestle is winning by leaps and bounds.
Oh, we won't let her. I wanted to tell you, I've got a message here from some people in Germany. Now, they first contacted me here about 8 years ago, and it was about the government of Germany taking the elderly people and shipping them out to Southeast Asia, most notably Vietnam, and warehousing them there because they said in Germany they were costing the German economy too much money. And my friend here, Greta, says, she said they are still doing this. Ms. Hammond is talking about how things run under the radar and there is no attention paid. And she said, we have been screaming about this for years, that they are shipping our elderly out. And we're not allowed to visit. We are allowed no contact, and we have no way of knowing if they are even still alive. We suspect that they are not. And so this has been going on over there. You know, as I brought up
in
the summit,
Germany,
Gretchen, this is a global. Yes, this is in Germany. I know they started this, like I say, it's been a good 7-8 years ago. And the families that I was talking to then spoke about the fact that their elderly people were shipped out, and they wouldn't know for about 2 weeks that this had happened. And then when they were advised that it had happened, they were told there was no contact and they could not call them, and that was just how it was. And apparently they're still doing it. Hold on here, Gretchen. We've got a caller, and I believe this is – hi, this is Marty.
Hello, Marty.
Hi, I thought
Marty.
That was you. Hi.
Hello, Gretchen. How are you? Chris from Australia. How are you?
Oh, hi. Hi. Yeah. I'm good. Thank you.
We sympathize with your struggle. We sympathize with the difficulty in exposing this horrible crime. We are experiencing this in Australia as well. We believe the media have a really big role to play in this, to expose this. I look, speaking to people for many, many years on this issue, what we have noticed is people are in disbelief. They cannot believe that our governments and our media would actually behave in this predatory manner. When you tell people that people are physically being institutionalized, I mean, tomorrow I'm actually attending a rally in Bendigo in Victoria. A lovely lady contacted us, and her mother has been institutionalized by the Public Guardian here in Victoria, and now they won't even allow her to take her mother out on her daily excursions. And she is actually protesting outside of the nursing home, and she effectively has been treated as a criminal. And in Australia, one issue, whether you don't see eye to eye with a brother or a sister, or there's a distant family member who sticks their nose in, or anything like that, any issue at all, and you are suddenly under the public guardian, you are a ward of the state, the trustees step in, they liquidate the estate, and this is happening on a daily basis. We look at the lists every day, and there are 20 or 30 victims just in Victoria that are being assessed, and that is happening nationwide. And it's absolutely horrible. And you know, to see the legislation that these politicians have implemented, to have these tribunals that can ignore evidence, they can actually legally ignore evidence, determine matters as they see fit. This is outrageous. I could not believe. And it cost me $100,000 for 3 years to contest this absolute rubbish. And to see that, you know, you cannot appeal in Australia. A 28-day appeal process, and only on a question of law. They have made it so difficult for you. These are life sentences. Life sentences heard by non-judicial members, and that's the way they like it. And I think, Marty, you said it well last month. This is not a broken system. that's working perfectly exactly as they intended it to work. These are pre-death duties.
Yes.
They can't, they cannot go to the election, to the electorate and say, hey, we want your money and we intend to institutionalise you and place a tax on you and da-da-da. They can't do that, so they do it through guardianship. And guardianship has proved to be a lovely multi-billion dollar business in Australia and worldwide. And they're not stopping. Yep. They are paying the media in Australia. We are now having a conference next week in Sydney. And we don't know how many people will attend. We had a lot of people just don't believe you. They just don't believe that this is actually happening. And it's
and
outrageous.
What's been the engagement, of the Australian press on this issue?
Well, we're fortunate in over a year we have been campaigning on Twitter and social media. That has been our friend. And we are warning Australians basically that you are at risk of being kidnapped. We have currently an aged care royal commission undergoing in Australia. People have been murdered, abused, raped, bathed in kerosene. This is all coming out now in our Royal Commission. Oh. One particular lady in South Australia, her husband had early onset dementia. She complained about the facility's care of him. He was wandering at night. Well, that was easy. What they did was the aged care facility applied for guardianship. She does not know where her husband is and has not seen him in years. This is what we're doing in this country. So you, effectively, you are removed. And what we've realised is the trick to this. See, when you see these abuses happening in aged care and the money fleecing, that's what we call the guardianship death rattle. That is the last stages of pillaging and killing off the person. What people cannot believe, and we try to tell them, is that there is actions that are happening before that. In stage one and two, there's a victim being lined up, and then there's the decision-making being wrestled away from that victim and that family.
And
once they've got that decision-making, that's it.
The actual Australian media,
outside
of social media, have they engaged at all?
Well, they have now, because after a year of screaming daily by a gang of us on Twitter and social media, they have reached out to us. But you can see the disbelief. You can actually see the disbelief. Now, we're for now undergoing, we are speaking to a lady who is interested in covering this story nationwide. But the problem that we're facing is there's a lot of pressure to shelve this story. We are talking meetings. There was one particular report in February that the journalist exposed the public trustee and the abuses that are happening there. Apparently, the next day there were meetings and conference calls, and the public trustees and the public guardians and the tribunal members all meeting up. How do we contain this? How do we contain this? They don't want this coming out, because when the public see it, and it's really sad, but once they see it on that big screen nationwide, they will believe it. If I tell them, or if you tell them, they don't believe it. They say, oh, there must be more to the story. Or maybe there's a family conflict. And they think there's this big mass. Yes, this big massive abuse. We're seeing now partners losing loved ones to the system. So, for instance, if I had a stroke and I went into hospital, it is possible for my husband to be disempowered. And they said, no, sorry, Nick, we believe that you are an abuser and we're taking over Chris's affairs. And it's as simple as that. And when you tell people that, they think you're insane. They think this they can't do that.
You've made a very good point. The line is usually touted, and there's certainly one that I've heard many, many times, is that there must be more to this than the story, that these families must be abusing people. And, you know, that is a talking point that has been, you know, generally sort of set about by the Michigan Guardianship Association, National Guardianship Association, the majority of users of family members or friends, certainly one that the Michigan Attorney General has engaged in, you know, which is why our story focused entirely on cases that were filed by social workers, APS, outside agencies, for no verifiable reason at all. The other thing that's interesting is that there was a news station, Channel 12, it was an ABC affiliate, Channel 12 in Flint,
at this event yesterday, and it was clear that the lead on this story was a bunch of people who had put Dana Nessel into such a tither that she left early, and that they were confronting her openly. And yet, the story that aired yesterday evening on Channel 12 was about elder abuse in general, did not mention guardianship at all, made no sense, because he was quoting from people who were talking about guardians but cutting out the word guardians. So it was almost like, you know, Ross and McKinney got on the phone and said, you're not going to mention guardianship as long as I'm alive. And it was I sort of looked at this thing totally agog, because I'd seen the video and I was like, that's not what happened. This wasn't a shining moment for Nessel. So the press tend to, and people, to go back to your earlier question, why am I leaving journalism? It's precisely because of that. I mean, if you can get the press to squash a story like that, an obvious story like that, then where is the actual fourth estate? I don't know if it's not in the pockets of people it should be reporting upon.
Well, we're seeing in Australia at the moment, and I passed it on to Marty, an ad, can you trust your families? This is a nationwide blitz in all newspapers. There's a lady with basically a strip across her mouth, and in that strip you see the words, can you trust your family? Now, can you imagine, this is the Bankers Association that has lined up with the government to promote this rubbish, okay, nationwide, and you see it. Now, they won't touch it on social media because we have attacked them, because that's pretty much our domain, and we've pretty much questioned them on that type of propaganda. I call it Joseph Goebbels propaganda. And we've put crosses on that picture and distributed that quite, you know, extensively. But you see, imagine now an ad saying, can you trust Asians? Can you trust Anglo-Saxons? Can you trust African-Americans? There would be a national outcry in this country if we saw that. But this ad, can you trust your families, is met with a blink, like nothing. How can anyone promote such nasty rubbish? And that is what we're seeing. There is a fight against the state versus the family. The family unit is in danger. Serious danger. We are demonized. There's always a rat bag. Every family has one. But that one rat bag is being as an excuse to remove everybody. That is the excuse. That is, then that particular lady in Bendigo, she does not see eye to eye with her sister. She has evidence to state that her sister left in, you know, her mother could be abused by her sister. She went into a tribunal, provided the evidence, and the tribunal said to her, we don't look at evidence. The minute there's a conflict, the person is a ward of the state. How scary is that?
Yes.
Now, I have three children. Imagine I'm in my 70s and they don't see eye to eye. I can become a ward of state. This is rubbish. This is crazy. This is just an excuse to fleece the elderly and make a lot of money.
Right. Now, and I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. And Marty, I've noticed this, when it comes to social media, right now the narrative is obviously controlled by the reformists or the abolitionists, whichever side you're on, and the pro-guardianship people aren't as prolific. But what is also the problem here is on social media that, you know, for example, you know, in the United States, if we're talking about, you know, illegal immigrants and concentration camps at the border, then, you know, you post one story about that, you're going to get, you know, 10,000-15,000 shares on it. You know, you post one story about, you know, a developmentally disabled or senior person who has been locked inside a home with a padlocked refrigerator where they can't get any food, you know, and that maybe gets 59, 60, 70 shares if you're lucky. While the narrative is controlled, say, more by, folks on social media than the Michigan Guardianship Association, you better believe that, you know, if there is a media report, like, for example, when the Elder Abuse Task Force was announced, the Michigan Guardianship Association were all over that with, you know, their nonsense narrative. So, so again, what's missing on social media, I think, is the level of support. And I think, you know, when you look at this in terms of, you know, the millennials who sort of set themselves against the boomer generation, you know, for whatever reason, you know, the millennials aren't being captured as supporters in this. You know, even though the messaging really should be, okay, you know, this could be you one day. Right now it could be your parents, it could be your grandparents. You know, so this is something you must engage in because this is multicultural. When, you know, when we looked at those cases, it was all races, all social backgrounds, all religions, you know, ages 19 to 98, people who were bipolar, people who had diabetes, you know. I know a bunch of the people with bipolar. And again, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, it could be you. I mean, some really genuinely young people were, and they weren't all over 60 in guardianship, not by a long shot. And yet everything was taken away from them. And, you know, and I think, you know, so and there isn't more to the story than that. I mean, it was literally APS filing a bogus petition and then someone, you know, and then getting appointed the public administrator, life is over and it's a life sentence, as you know. And funny, I did speak to a journalist in Michigan. I just out of curiosity, I said, look, why won't Michigan media engage in this? And he said, well, you know, our newsrooms are depleted. And we get these phone calls from family members, and they go on for 4 to 5 hours about interfamily dynamics. No one's got the time to hear it. And so then I sent him the story, and I said, well, it's not always interfamily dynamics. It's social workers who are filing bogus petitions, and I never heard from them again. Never heard from them again.
Imagine that. Imagine that.
Well, you know, because, again, the line that everyone seems to want to tell here is all the fault of the family and their friends. And it is a lie. It is a piece of propaganda which has been completely ingrained in even those who know it. So they've got two things working for them, the pro-guardianship people. One, hardly anyone knows about it. And two, those who do know about it and who are aware of the issue are buying the propaganda. Unless they're a victim or a supporter of a victim, they're buying the propaganda that this is, there's more to the story. Like you said, they must have done something wrong. You know,
one of the reasons the state won't do anything is the money involved that comes into the general fund through Title 20, Social Security block grants, and a large portion of that, many millions of dollars, is earmarked for elderly care. Not that they ever account for where that money actually went. But there again, you've got a quota system that's at work there. In order to qualify for that money, they have to, on a quarterly basis, estimate the number of people they're going to bring into the system under guardianship. And they every quarter, it has to expand by at least 6% in order for the agency to receive its bonuses. And so they – go ahead.
Yeah, the thing I really don't get, is that, you know, within 1 to 3 years, we found mostly average of one, no matter what that assets, all that money they tell you to save, you know, for your retirement, these people were being thrown onto the Medicaid and social service, Medicaid especially.
Yes.
You know, within a year. Yes. I mean, they're throwing people onto why? And maybe you're any listeners from the GOP or Republicans can answer this. Why aren't the Republicans up in arms about this? You know, they're always going on about how there are too many people on social services, and yet you have attorneys and judges who are facilitating that. People who have saved their life, got their 401k, done what they're supposed to do. And these guardians are wiping them out in a year and throwing them on Medicaid. I mean,
exactly. Well, and the other part of it is, too, the GOP is supposed to be all pro-life. Pro-life this, pro-life that. And they'll harangue for days about it. But when you bring up the issue of the elderly, they're not pro-life then. They just go completely silent.
Also, other issues that the GOP gets mad about, you know, judicial overreach. They hate that.
And yet you have a constant example of judicial overreach. This is judicial overreach times a thousand. This is massive judicial overreach. The GOP should be, and this is, again, if you want to talk about the nanny state, what the hell is a guardian? I mean, you know, it's more of a dictator than a nanny, but again, where is the GOP on this? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they should be looking at this in absolute bloody fury. They should be going,
Gretchen,
go ahead.
The other part of this that just absolutely sets me on fire is these churches, on behalf of several people who were longtime members of churches who got caught up in this. I went to their churches and said, you're a member of your congregation who's been with you 20 years, 30, 40 years, has been caught up in this guardianship, and they need you to advocate for them, to support them, and try to get them out of this. Oh, we can't do that. That's political, and we'd lose our tax-exempt status. This is not political. This is humanity. This is humanitarian. Yes, but they will not get involved. That's another one that sits silent.
And I know plenty of churches, I know plenty of Jewish temples that engage on social issues. You know, they almost do it as part of their, you know, part of their work, and certainly on the right and the left, you know, whether that's pro-life or anti-life, whether that's pro-immigrant or anti-immigrant, you know, they will engage on social issues. You know, it's sort of, again, that, but they won't engage on this. You know, right now in Michigan, I've got a gift for the GOP. I mean, they have a governor and an attorney general who are complicit in the robbery, theft, and abuse, neglect, stripping of civil rights, stripping of constitutional rights, stripping of human rights of American citizens. They could ride this all the way to the bank in 2020 if they wanted. But again, it's like silence. And I want to, I desperately want to know what is with the problem. What is the what's the engagement issue? Why doesn't anyone want to engage?
Well, go look at who donates to the campaigns of those politicians and those officials.
Oh, we've looked at
and
it.
It'll,
yeah, but
I know.
There's
a lot more money that changes hands that never gets recorded.
Oh, sure. And Michigan certainly says 1995. I mean, I have said repeatedly after this investigation, following this investigation, I said the one thing that, you know, I can say, you know, we determined among many other things that we determined was that Michigan is not governed from Lansing, not from the capital. It's governed from Troy, where you've got law firms like Kemp Klein, which is a law firm that would give John Grisham nightmares. I mean, that place is it churns out evil. You know, like the alien queen aliens churned out little aliens and little egg sacks. I mean, they churn out these evil, nasty, frickin' lawyers. You know, and you know, you've got Kemp Klein, you've got the Prince Law Firm, you've got Plunkett Cooney. I mean, these law firms are super powerful. And one of the things that you know, Kemp Klein's Alan May did as a shareholder there, he's been there since the beginning of time, you know, and Milton Mack Jr., I mean, these are, you know, the heavy hitters, probably the founders of this entire system in Michigan. They learned very, very quickly to donate across party lines because they knew that, obviously, you know, power is cyclical. So it's going to go from one party to the next, to the next, to the next. And they always made sure they were covered. Jennifer Callahan, the Oakland County judge who's currently presiding over the Aretha Franklin case, I mean, she was an employee over one of the guardians we looked at, John Young. She used to be his employee, but... and she ran in 2016 against four other judges, I believe, four other contenders, I believe, for that seat on the bench. She has a husband who is an FBI agent in the Detroit office, Sean. And so, obviously, all the attorneys, all four of the incumbent judges, all got behind her. So, pretty much, she walked into office. And you could see why. Because she's got connections. And not because she's particularly good at what she does, she isn't. I've watched her. She is like a cheerleader / pom-pom girl with absolutely no sense of what she's doing. When she gets in a tizzy, she starts rubbing her hair and doesn't really cite the law as much as she sort of screams. And it's bizarre to watch her. It seems like she doesn't have the sense God gave a donor, but yet she is a sitting judge in Oakland County for obvious reasons. Again, you kind of look at this and you go, yeah, they've been very smart, and then it's a brilliantly savvy campaign of reaching across party lines, of donating across party lines, of making alliances. But at some point, you have to hope that there is someone in the legislature, because it's going to have to be the legislature or the Supreme Court, who say enough is enough. Now, the Supreme Court had that person. She's passed on now. Her name was Elizabeth Weaver. But she wrote a startling book about the inner workings of the Supreme Court before she died. And she said, have the courage and do what is right. And that's how she lived. And that book shows how the Supreme Court, for most of her tenure, refused to do that. And that especially went to the issue of guardianship. Especially. We saw a judge in Macomb County called Pamela Georgia Sullivan, who went up against Catherine George and tried to call her out. And for her trouble, she lost the seat on the bench. She was forced to resign.
Wow.
And then you also have an attorney named Stephen Cohen, who spoke out about a judge in Wayne County and two of his attorneys who drained the Rosa Parks estate. The civil rights leader, they drained her estate. And he spoke up about it, and what did he get? He got hauled up in front of the Michigan Attorney Grievance Commission and faced disciplinary proceedings because of it.
Yep.
So there are people who are willing to speak out, but boy, are they slapped down fast.
No, they are, very fast. That's the worst part of it. If they try to actually present a defense or even go on the offensive to stop what's happening, they quickly get sanctioned, disbarred, their name and reputation is ruined. They absolutely will plant false articles about them. They'll have people troll them online. They'll do all kinds of things, anything to ruin them, because nobody, and I mean nobody, is allowed to stop this money train. And that's what it is. You talked about these big law firms, Gretchen. I read recently, and I think it was put out by Westlaw, and I may be wrong there, so don't quote me on it, but that 60% of the income on all major law firms across the country comes from guardianship. It's their bread and butter. It keeps the bills paid. And, when we see legislation come out like this last one, S-591, that is absolutely worthless, but there is nothing in there about capping the amount these people can hit that estate. And I think that's part, the most insidious part of all of this, is that they set up this system so the person that they have targeted has to pay them to be targeted. They have to pay for all the crap these people do to them. I think that's sick. That is absolutely sick. And I have compared this to having to pay for weave the rope to hang you with. This is exactly what they're doing. Australia, Chris just said, she said they use the victim's funds to fight the victim. That's just exactly what it is.
And I have seen that. I have to find the link again, but there was an organization, we didn't include it in the story, but it was like a pro-elder law organization encouraging attorneys to go into the elder law practice, and they said business is booming. Obviously it is.
Yes.
And this is a lucrative, and these were their words, it is a lucrative practice to go into, potentially lucrative. And they were encouraging people to go into it. The state and probate section of the Michigan Bar Association, of the State Bar of Michigan, is one of the largest membership sections. And they have a lot of power. We uncovered a memo that they circulated to their members on an annual retreat during an annual meeting during which they were discussing probate laws with other estate and probate lawyers across the country, Nevada, South Carolina. Emails were flying back and forth between them. So again, they were talking about they were actually making changes to legislation and suggesting it to the legislature. We took them quite seriously.
Right.
One of those pieces of legislation was the Senate bill which would have relaxed or made easier the visitation laws, and they crushed that. That ended up storming in committee in 2017. So when Nestle says she's got 9 pieces of legislation to fix this and she's going to get them through, I'd love to know how she thinks she's going to do it without the with pushback from the MGA, the Probate Judges Association, and the State Bar of Michigan. Come on. She doesn't tell people.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is, what people find out when they get into office is they aren't running or doing anything. There's all these so-called stakeholders, and I hate that word so bad I can't stand it, Gretchen, but stakeholders is a euphemism for people who have a vested interest in profiting from the way we're doing things, and they never mention this, that they actually are powerless to do anything unless these people give them the go-ahead. And you know, this is what she's finding, what Nestle's finding out. She has no power, no ability to do anything. These people will stop her if they have to ruin her to do it. They will.
Yeah. You know, and I think the only way this stops is by public pressure. I have said that to the people in Michigan.
Yeah.
I will repeat that to your audience. The only way this stops is by public pressure. It doesn't stop through the media, because right now they're not engaging. It doesn't stop through legislatures, because right now they're not engaging. It doesn't stop through the Attorney General, because right now she's covering it up. It has to happen through public pressure. And people have to value another human life. I don't care how old they are. I don't care what you think of the developmentally disabled. They are human beings. Value them.
Yes. Yes.
And also value your future, because this will be, I'm telling you right now, I mean, I'm not going to retire in this bloody country with a target on my back. No way.
No
way.
And I've tried to get across to younger people. You need to jump in here and contribute, because what you're looking at is your own future. If we don't get this stopped, this is what's coming in your future. You've been monetized, commodified. They're buying, selling, and trading us. And I'll reiterate again, every bill that comes out, whether it's state or federal, but most particularly federal, every bill that comes out and it has to go to committee first, the first committee it goes to is energy and commerce. You are not energy, so you must be in commerce. We have been commodified. We all have a target on our back with a big dollar sign. And even, as I brought up at this summit, even if you're only on Social Security, just in the local economy, you can be worth over $1 million a year in federal funding and state funding and what they take in your Social Security and any other benefits, pensions, like railroad retirement, VA. And that's another thing, Rachel. Here last year, in a string of emails, somebody accidentally included one that said they were looking at the high number of veterans and that they were getting veterans benefits in addition to their Social Security, and this could be the next big profit center for guardianship. So they're now looking at, and we're seeing this already happening, we're seeing this happen to our veterans. And it has happened to some degree, but apparently they're going to kick this into high gear.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing I would suggest to people who are listening is that, if you are a supporter or you are a family member of a victim or you're even the victim yourself, call your local – find out who your local news station is. Find out who your local journalists are. You can go to any news website and find out who their staff, go to their masthead, find out who your local editor is, city government politics, justice editor, if the newsroom is large enough, and hound them.
Mm-hmm.
Hound them, but hound them simply. Don't give them a 5-hour rundown of what, the business trollops your sisters are and what bastard shits your brothers are. They don't want to hear that. Tell them about they don't. I'm sorry, but they don't. And I know I'm going to get in trouble. Victim blaming. I'm not doing that. I am saying that the thing that they want to hear about is public corruption. And you just you talk about how a guardian came in, took over your life, stripped everything, and took over your mother's life, your brother's life, your sister's life, whatever it is, stripped them of everything they own, isolated them, tortured them, abused them, neglected them, and this is going on everywhere. You know, the angle that got the Orlando Sentinel involved in Florida in the Furley case was the fact that an enterprising journalist, a very, very good journalist, snagged on the angle that this woman was executing DNR orders and allowed one of her wards to choke to death.
Right.
And that
right.
was the angle. It wasn't about squabbling brothers. It wasn't about squabbling sisters. It wasn't about squabbling cousins.
Right.
It was about what this woman was doing. And you saw the can of worms that opened up. All it takes is one angle. Now, admittedly, my story went multiple angles. We covered everything. But, you know, sometimes it just takes one. And I would suggest that people try and do some research. You know, try and take the power out of the court's hands. Use the media where you can, but tell the story that you know journalists. Don't tell the story that you think you should tell the journalists. Don't tell the story that you're all worked up and emotional about. Tell them the story that you know they want to hear. They want to hear about public corruption. And, you know, a 5-hour lead-in as to, you know, why this happened and all the interfamily dynamics, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them. It should be a very simple go ahead.
That's one of the things, Gretchen, you know, we talked about briefly. One of the most difficult things that I've had to deal with doing these shows, the first 5-6 years, it was basically the victim's stories. And at some point I thought, you know, we've got to find a resolution, and we got to find a solution. We got to find a way to fix this. So I started bringing people on the air that had possible solutions in there. I brought Clear the Bench Colorado in. They'd gotten 2 Supreme Court justices removed. There was the couple, and I can't remember their name right offhand, in Chicago there that were running a cable news, cable TV show talking about, they're called Probate Sharks. And so Bev and Ken Cooper. And they came on and offered to help people, show them how to do cable, you know, a cable platform, and would walk them through it and everything else, and how to get their show on air. We had several groups and individuals come on about what they were doing to bring this to the public attention, and it was stuff that didn't cost you money, but it did require you to be physically active. We had not one person contacted them, not one. And then I got a lot of email from people of the victim stories need to be told. We know the stories. It's the same story almost every time. The name simply changed. You've got to focus on what is the process they're using to get this done. How have they twisted and torqued the law or statute to facilitate what they are doing? How did they set this system up?
As a matter of course, you know, I would even, you know, when you're pitching this to journalists, I would even take the word guardianship out. To say my mother, my grandmother was abused, neglected, stripped of her civil and constitutional rights, robbed of $300,000, and ended up dying in a long-term facility because she was overdrugged. Don't even mention the word guardianship. At least get on the phone.
Right.
If we're thinking the word guardianship is scaring the heck out of them, and then when you get them on the phone, after you've got them via an email, you don't tell. I think it's perfectly all right to tell the story of your mom or your dad and the guardian that abused that person and why they abused them, how many other people they have abused that you know of.
Right.
Right? But don't tell them 5 hours of how this all started to happen. Because my brothers and my sisters were fighting over the estate. Don't talk about that. Leave that out.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's only doing you a detriment as far as engaging the media. And I know people are going to be like, well, they should be listening anyway. Maybe, yeah, sure. But you have to understand that newsrooms are completely decimated at the moment. Journalists have, staff journalists have 5, 10, 15 different assignments even in a day. They don't have time for a 5-hour conversation with you. They don't. I'm sorry, they don't. You know, it's like I still get emails. Why don't you come to Maine? Why don't you come to Pennsylvania? Why don't you come to Ohio? Why don't you come to Virginia? It's just as bad. It's just as bad. It's just as bad. Guys, I don't have any money left. You know, I mean, I spent spent all my money on one investigation in Michigan of one county probate court. I don't have, even if I was a staff journalist somewhere and I went to my editor, can I do this again? It's like, no way, Jose.
Yeah.
You know, you've got other things really, we've got other things we want you to do. You know, you can't just rely on one person. I think everyone in Michigan's now my story's out. Everyone's like, well, maybe WXYZ will help us again. Let's go back to Heather. Heather's still doing stories. Let's go find her. I'm like, guys, you know, you've got stories out there. Wave them in front of people. You know, I mean, get them out in front of people. Protest. If you want to make a story, 15 or 20 people sitting outside and protesting, holding placards in front of Galen Nestle's office or whether she's having another one of her self-congratulatory, self-promoting events in elder abuse, how she's doing more than anyone else has ever done for elder abuse, which is not a lie.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, get her out,
right.
Get out 15 to 20 people sitting outside of Galen Nestle's office with placards saying, you lying bitch, is going to bring the press out.
Yes,
it's going to bring the press out.
And you know, the other thing, Gretchen, too, is that people, you know, there's a lot of low or no cost things you can do in order to meet, and it takes a small group of people. People you know, your public library, if it's a public, you know, event, you know, it's for the public good, you can get a room at your public library for nothing. You just have to reserve it. And so what if you only have 10 or 15 people there to start? The next time you have a meeting, there'll be 20, 30 people there, and it grows. You can't expect to you know, come out blasting the first time out. It just doesn't happen. You have to grow. You have to gain people's interest. You have to educate them on the topic and let them know what's going on. But you've made a very salient point, and that is this minute-by-minute, blow-by-blow account of what happened. You can't do this. People don't have the time. And it's not that they're not interested, but that's not the core of the story. The core of the story is the system that's at work, how they're doing why they're getting away with it.
Yeah, exactly. I tell you that they're definitely not interested in hearing about warring families. They don't want to get involved.
Right.
They don't want to get in the middle of it. There's very few journalists who do. The lawyering is a nightmare on it because, you know, it's he said, she said, basically. But the one thing that's factual, obviously, is what the Guardian did, and that's painful and horrible in any situation. But if you're going to try and get the media involved, you've got to keep to what the Guardian did and not the beat up to it. And, you know, that's the key. And the other thing is, the other excuse I hear all the time is, we're so busy, you have no idea, we're so busy with our cases, we're so busy with this, we're so busy with that. Okay, yeah, granted. That's when you form into groups, and you form into groups that get together and they don't fight with each other, which everyone seems to be doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I don't get, Marty. In 2011, I began work with the Survivors Network for those abused by priests. And stop me if you've heard this before. I don't know how many times I've been on your show, but at the time I was a activist / fundraiser. And I always wanted to go for the voiceless. And obviously people who've been abused by a priest had been traumatized and were voiceless. And, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, those people were very much the same position that survivors of probate abuse are in. You know, no one was believing them. They were conspiracy theorists. What do you mean the Pope's in on this? Get a break. Give me a break. Just get out of here. No one wanted to engage. No one wanted to listen to them. But what they did is they didn't fight amongst each other all the time, calling each other names and scrapping for the spotlight.
Right.
In fact, they were very, very humble.
Right.
Most of the time, journalists could not get them to go on record with their faces and pictures. That's not the same, you know, with what we see in the probate abuse. They were very humble. They got together, and by the time the Boston Globe article came out in 2002, those guys were ready to launch. And within 9 years, when I joined them in 2011, they were a nationwide movement. And they were a month after I joined that organization, they marched to The Hague. I'm not kidding. They marched to The Hague. They flew over there, a group of them, and they filed crimes against humanity charges against then Pope Benedict. Controlled the news cycle that day. And the case, of course, had no charge. But they did a big press conference. There were pictures of them reeling stacks and stacks of case files into the Hague, into the International Criminal Court, and it was a big deal. No one had ever done it before, and they could not have done that unless they organized, publicity stunt or not. They did it. They organized. They were ready.
Right.
So when the wasn't my story that did it. So maybe it'll be another one 4 or 5 years down the road that someone will get on this and realize, that this is a systemic problem, and someone will study it from that point of view, like I tried to do, and someone else will do it this time in the national paper. And by that time, everyone will have organized and have got together. So when it does blow up, you guys are ready. You guys are absolutely ready. So that, who knows, 9 years from now, you can go down to the Hague and file crimes against humanity charges against some county judge or some attorney. Who knows? I mean, I would just say that the sky's the limit if you are prepared to organize. And what I hear from people right now is, well, that group's awful. We can't talk about that. We can't talk about that. That is horrible. And I can't talk about that person because they support that group, and that group supports that person. We don't like that person. And it's like, wait a minute. Your enemy is not each other. Your enemy is the probate court, the judges, the attorneys, the quote-unquote equity court. Let's start calling that out for the lie that it is. There's no equity in equity court. That's false advertising.
No.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, that's the equity court. Why don't we just call them what they are? Let's just call them, step to lifelong imprisonment for the innocent court. I mean, let's talk about it in what they are. Theft courts, robbery courts. They're not equity courts.
Right.
Family courts?
No.
Destruction of family courts.
Yep.
I mean, come on. Let's stop changing the narrative. And the narrative that has been pushed around by these people. No, it's not family members and friends that are doing all the abusing. It's the people who no one talks about. The attorneys, the judges, and let's stop
the guardians.
And the other thing I want us to stop. Yes, you've got to do it in court. But I am sick to death of people saying, "Well, they're a judge; we have to respect them." I am sorry. If you bought an election because a bunch of attorneys bought a seat for you on the bench and bought you a cheap black robe, you do not deserve my respect. Zero, zilch, nada, none. Goodness gracious.
Tell us what you really think, Gretchen.
I don't care if you've got a bloody gavel. I don't care. Earn it. And if you're putting people away for speaking out on Facebook because you feel threatened, you don't deserve respect. You do not deserve respect. If you are approving guardianship accounts where money is being sold left, right, and center, stolen, and if you are approving the sale of 59 homes for $2 million under market value, and you are taking out mortgages on your own $350,000 homes and paying it off in 3 years, no, you do not deserve respect at all. Let's get past that.
Gretchen.
For crying out loud.
I've been asked to ask you to talk about the petition to stop the horrific abuse of the Michigan's attorneys and abuses, or attorneys and judges of the vulnerable. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, it went out on change.org, which is great. Someone read the story and got in touch with me, and she said, "I want to start a petition." Fine, I said, "Go for it." And so far, I believe it's got about 1,400 signatures, nowhere near enough. Again, if you're looking for a petition, she's done great. I'm sorry, Dahlia, if you're listening.
Who's this? Who did this?
But her name is Dahlia Weiss. She's out of Chicago. But, I mean, she's a wonderful gal. But, like I said, 1,500 signatures.
Where can we find it out?
That's at change.org.
Where can we find it at?
That's change.org. You can go onto my social media, my Facebook page. It's all over there. I know the National Guardianship Association has been sharing it around. National Guardianship.
Okay.
The National Association to Stop Guardianship Abuse, my apologies, have been sharing it around.
Uh-huh.
I know other groups and other people have been sharing it around.
You know, you really can't miss it. The face, Nancy Haddock's face is in front of it. Yeah, it's about 1,500 signatures. I believe the petition is, Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel stop the abuse of elderly and developmentally disabled people. You know,
okay.
People anywhere in the country or the world can sign it. Don't have to be Michigan. And I would also say this. Another thing I've been getting consistently, you know, is, wow, you wrote about Michigan, but it's worse in Virginia. Oh, it's worse in Pennsylvania. Oh, it's worse in Ohio. Why should we sign this bloody petition? It's not Ohio-based. It's, we need help here. Think nationwide, people. If you bring down a system like Michigan or Florida, then all of them can come tumbling down. You have to learn from it. You know, you can't just sit there on your laurels and say, well, we don't have any help in Ohio. Help other people. Bring yourself a bit of good karma as well. You know, I mean, it's horrifically painful what you're going through. And I, as a journalist, feel for you. And I wish I could be everywhere doing every single story. I don't have the money. I don't have the – I just can't do it anymore. I can't.
Right.
You know, I just – so, you know, you've got to take the power into your – what did Gandhi say? You know, provoke. We're going to take the power out of their hands and put it in ours. And that's a guy – in case people don't know, who walks around in a loincloth and a stick with a stick and brought down the British Empire.
Yes.
He was nothing.
Yes.
He was a small time attorney in South Africa. And that's how he got started.
Right.
And, you know, he united a people against oppression. And, you know, and people listened to what he had to say. But that is because Muslims and Hindus in India put aside their differences, stopped going after each other with scythe, and, you know, for a moment there, when they wanted the Brits out, they were united in that. All of them. And that's what you've got to do. You've got to be united. You've got to organize. You've got to think past your own pain and look at others and realize that if you're going to address this systemically, you've got to address it systemically. You've got to address it in a nationwide way. Because right now, if it's just my pain, then, you know, someone will listen to you eventually, you hope. But, you know, if it's our pain, you've got better chance of that happening. The call from Australia is walking proof of that. These guys have organized.
Yeah.
They've got together
a
small thing going. But they're making headway.
Yep.
And that is what needs
they
to
are,
happen in this country.
Well, you know, and we have, like I say, I've been doing this going on 12 years, actually been involved in this. And I don't join anything. It's just the rule I have. I'm independent because I'm kind of prone to saying what I think, and a lot of people don't like that. One of the things, I don't know if you've encountered this, Gretchen, is a lot of times before, like, I speak to a legislature or something, people say to me, now, Marty, you got to be nice. You got to be nice when you go in there, because if you're not, they're going to get mad and retaliate. Excuse me?
I think we're past the point where we have to worry about retaliation. I'm sorry. I mean, I have called Nestle all
they're
the names under the sun. I've not been nice about it. I started out nice, and once... You know, I realized that she set herself against me. I set herself, and if I have to fight her alone, I will do it. I will bloody well do it, but I am not going to sit there and give this woman niceties when she is allowing the torture and destruction of vulnerable people. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
And the time for that
right.
is over. And I don't care what she wants to do or what she wants to retaliate with me or how she wants to retaliate. Good. Welcome. Try, Dana, if you're listening.
Yep.
Come on. Come after me. I could use the publicity. The story could use the publicity. But, so come
there
on. Bring it on, bony little cow.
Yep.
And you bring it on. Bring it to me. And I'm done with that. I am done with that. If you are going to sit there and go, oh, we've got to be nice to these legislators. Oh, we've got to be nice to this judge. No.
Yeah.
Stop that. You know, there comes a point where you have to set aside politeness
and realize that this is life and death. And,
yes, it
I'm
is.
Sorry, but that, you have to. The NGA doesn't do that. You know, they'll come in, and I've interviewed Catherine Falk, and she has said every time she's gone out there and touted her legislation, some numbskull, nimwit, some nimrod from the NGA is there giving their little ridiculous,
yep,
idiotic bollocks of a talking point, and they don't show Catherine any respect. They don't.
No.
So, you know, I mean,
no,
you know, they're out there making up lies, making up nonsense. Call them out.
Yes.
Call
yep
them out.
And
make
and
your they, legislation
the other thing
listen
is people. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'm making listen. You know, I said to the people
yeah
in Michigan, hey, you know what? The Michigan Guardianship Association has a lobbying day every year. So you go that same day and counter lobby, or the day after and counter lobby, preferably
yeah
on the same
yes
day. You should go and troll them as they walk around the offices in Lansing, and when they walk out of an office, you walk in and say, now here's
there you
the
go
lies they've been
you
telling
go
you. Here's the truth. Here's the truth.
Yes.
Here are the people
yes
that they say they're protecting. Here's what they're actually doing to them. Show them photographs. Show them bruises. Show them death. Show them pictures of your grandmother and your aunt laying in their coffins, having been torn out of their lives. Show them that. You know, I
no
mean, and show them what the reality of this is. Make them listen.
Yes.
Because I'm telling you now, if they had every single legislator in their pockets, then lobbying days would not be necessary, so you have to wonder why they are.
Yeah.
So obviously, they still
yeah
feel like they have work to do. So go and counter them. And if you don't have
yeah
the time, get a group together and counter them.
Yes. Yeah.
That's
and,
the
you
way
know,
to
the
do
problem
it
with that, Gretchen, and I agree with you, it is that people seem to lack the ability to work together as a group. It's a rare thing that they do. And there's always going to be one or two individuals that will rise up in that group and decide they're king or queen. And then the war starts. And I oftentimes wonder if many of these people weren't sent in to do just exactly that, to disrupt
you know,
and derail things.
It reminds me of Monty Python's Life of Brian. It's one of the considered one of the funniest comedies ever made, because it was making social commentary left, right, and center. And one of the comments that they made was, you know, you had, this was set in obviously biblical times and in Jerusalem, and you had this what do you want to call it, terrorist group or group of freedom fighters called the Judean People's Front or the People's Front of it was the Judean People's Front, I think. No, it was the People's Front of Judea.
Uh-huh.
It's so confusing. And you know, Brian, the lead character, goes up to them and says, can I help you fight the Romans? Sure. But there's only one people we hate more than the Romans, and that's the Judean People's Front and the Judean Popular People's Front. And they started listing off all these other groups that they despise more than they despise the Romans. And that was the Pythons brilliantly capturing the way people sometimes are. They want to hate each other more than they want to hate the enemy. And, you know,
yes,
it's time to do that. You know, if Patton was addressing, you know, his army just before D-Day, and he was giving his one, you've seen the speech, you know, we're gonna rip out their
yeah
guts and use them to grease the wheels of our tread, or grease the treads of our tank, right? He said that, and half mm-hmm his army looks at each other and goes, oh, I don't know about that, General. We don't like each other very much. You know, I think we'd rather go to war with that platoon rather than the Germans. I don't know, they're just nasty people. They say things about us behind
yeah
our backs. You know, I think the Germans would have won. So, you know,
yeah,
look at the real enemy. Stop looking at yourselves. And yeah, sure. I mean, I've spoken to people in Michigan. People in Michigan say, well, I'm going to be the one that brings it all down. No, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you
right
aren't. No.
Right.
It's going to be a group of you. This is how it works. You know, I mean, Martin Luther King led the civil rights movement. He was not the civil rights movement. That was a lot of people.
Right.
Martin Luther King speaking by himself would have done no good. crossing the bridge at Selma by himself, so what? Thousands of people linked arms crossing the bridge at Selma. Yes, you got something. But you can't just be a one-person voice in this, and you can't all be one people speaking a disjointed chorus. You have to be a single chorus and a loud one-note chorus. Get it through people's heads.
Right.
Whether that's the press, politicians, or your fellow Americans.
There you go. Gretchen, we've got about 5 minutes left here. Is there anything you missed that you would like to talk about? You're such a fireball.
I don't know. I think I've covered everything. I will say that I do have a life beyond journalism. It's going to be involved in this issue. We have made, there's no announcement that's been made yet, but I'm sure there will be, because I know my boss is listening. When are we going to announce this, boss?
Okay.
So I will tell people that. I mean, again, I'm going to miss it. I am going to miss journalism terribly. I loved what I did.
I can imagine.
I like to think I was moderately good at what I did, or at least, that's what the little plaques say on the wall. But at the same time, reality sort of stepped in. And I've got to get out of here when I retire. And that means saving money and recouping everything I lost doing this story.
Yeah.
I've been slamming journalists a lot in this little hour and a half, but I have every respect for them. I hope that they can find a way to engage in issues that matter. It ain't always about what Trump tweeted, because, if everyone's writing about that. So find something different to write about. Find something different to engage the public in. And I hope people do that. And I hope your listeners realize that, everything I said, although very brusque and very typical for me, is not in a bad way. It's not meant harshly. It's not meant to sort of criticize or be angry at people or this, that, and the other. But it is to help.
Mm-hmm.
I want desperately to help, but I cannot do it alone. I can't fight Dana Nessel alone. I can't do it.
There
you
go.
Need people behind me. And if you are listening and you want to get behind me, you can find me on Facebook. I'm not that hard to find, Gretchen Rachel Hammond. You can find me online, and we can go after this woman together. We can bring her down.
Yep.
And we can make her accountable for this.
And we can make an example out of her.
Every state in the country is game for this. State, every governor, every attorney general. Then you get the lawyers on the run. But you have to get behind me, because right now she is not afraid of me. I mean, I may spit fire.
Well, we need
at her.
To change that.
Yeah, but we need to change it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, we need to change that.
I'm asking for people's help. There's an open letter to her right now floating around Facebook. It got shared. It's the one I got banned from Facebook for 24 hours on. You get on my page, see it, share it around.
And I got it on my page, too. Yeah. And, I've got it on my page also, and I shared it in various places. I find it extraordinary. Yes. And sign the petition. Go to Gretchen's site and locate the petition and sign it. I'll be doing that as soon as I get off of here. Gretchen, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's always a joy. Always an honor. Thank you.
If you weren't at the summit this year, you need to watch the video. She tore the whole place up. Nearly had everybody crying at one point, which with people like me that wear makeup, that's not a good thing. But anyway, we will be back tomorrow night with an episode of Whistleblowers. Carrie DeVore will be coming on. We'll be talking about street fraud that's going on and some things that are happening there. I want to remind everybody, these shows are brought to you by Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. It's done in coordination with them. And that takes place at the end of July every year in Washington, D.C. And we'll be back again this next year. So, Gretchen, again,
wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody that tuned in, everybody that has, we had a full call board, so that's always good. And the messages that came in, and there were other questions, but you already had covered or did cover those questions. So I let those slide. So I hope everybody's happy. We did the best we could. Thanks, Australia, for calling in. We appreciate it. And we will see you all tomorrow night. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Gretchen. Thank you.